Hi, everybody. It's Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guest or two to help you lead a more positively minded life. With me today, an old friend, Natalie H. Rogers, not to be confused with Natalie Rogers, daughter of Carl Rogers. This is Natalie H. Rogers, daughter of her own Rogers, Theodore Rogers, right?
Leo
Rogers. Hey, Natalie, welcome to WBAI.
Hello, Armand. It's great to be here.
Hey, we go back a long way. Why I bring Natalie on the air today is because Natalie has a way of helping people deal with a certain form of shyness called performance anxiety. Now, performance anxiety is kind of crippling. She is the author of a book called The New Talk Power, The Mind-Body Way to Speak Without Fear. And I thought Natalie could give us some hints about how not to be shy about talking in public, you know, or talking to public. Well, let's talk about performance anxiety, Natalie. What is it?
Well, performance anxiety is the inability to function normally, to concentrate when you're being observed or evaluated by an audience.
It doesn't have to be a big audience, though.
It could be a job interview. It could be playing golf. It could be saying your name in a circle. It could be standing up and doing a presentation. It could be walking down the aisle when you're getting married or in a marriage, in a wedding party. It could be even walking into a restaurant alone. Any situation where you feel people are looking at you.
Well, you mean if you have a feeling that you're being observed and you find yourself tongue-tied, stuttering, unable to say anything, frozen in speech, this is performance anxiety?
This is a form of performance anxiety, right? Mm-hmm.
Whether it be based on shame or shyness or whatever it is, it's basically your mouth is frozen, and what you're going to do and what you do is help people learn how to unfreeze their words.
I help to train them so that they have the skills to be able to do whatever they have to do. Yeah.
So it happens everywhere in everyday life. I know you do big work. I know you do work with big groups and you work with organizations. But if people are afraid to speak up for themselves in any situation...
Absolutely. If you're intimidated by your boss and you can't talk to him or her, if you have to go to a meeting and you have to say something like a PTA meeting or a co-op board meeting, if you're a student in school, you can't raise your hand and ask a question or answer a question comfortably, then the ordinary person, a performance occurs every day in every way.
Co-op board. Meetings. If you're in jail and you have to talk to one of your jailmates.
Or your lawyer.
Right.
Even talking to your doctor. Some people are so intimidated by talking to an authority figure that they can't ask the questions that they had prepared.
Boy, it certainly is true. They get so afraid that they get frozen for a while.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about that today, and we're going to talk about what that means. And we're also going to talk about what this means to children, because the people who have children might pay attention to this with their children, because if a child had the tools of being able to speak comfortably, it certainly is going to increase their chances of getting where they want to go in life.
Oh, definitely. You have to have conversational or performance skills in order to have any kind of career.
But if you follow your heart and your heart is frightened, if you follow your gut and your gut is in fear, like most New Age people will tell you to do, you'd never talk.
Well, then you have to have the skills. We have to have respect for talking in public, because talking is not something that one is born with, the ability to talk and present in that way. And so you have to understand that if you want to learn how to talk so that it's beautiful, so that you look confident, so that you look like a leader, you have to pay attention and do some training.
Even if you're a private type.
Especially if you're a private type.
Yeah, if you're the type, let's say you're an architect or a book publisher or something like that, and you're used to working in your own little world, you know, and then suddenly you got to go out and speak in public. It's all right. Look, we're going to look at this deeply because I think this is something of real value for people. Let's look at it. What is the first key here? If a person finds themselves unable, don't they have to analyze where this comes from?
Well, it is helpful to know how you got it, how you got this fear, but that really won't help you to overcome it and to function. What you really, because it's a fear of speaking in public or performance anxiety is complex. It's a skill. You have to be able to do something. It's not like a fear of heights or a fear of flying. And so you have to begin to train way before the actual moment when you have to perform so that you have, in acting we call this the instrument, you have the mind and the body that can support your thoughts and ideas when people are staring at you. And that's what they do, you know, they look at you, not like in a conversation.
In a regular conversation, when someone is talking to you, they're not staring you. You know, sometimes you get those eyes that go right through you, and that doesn't necessarily scare you because intimacy, somebody looking at you in a personal conversation might mean that they love you and they feel intimate with you. But eyes staring at you, it's people evaluating you. That's what could trigger this, is what you're saying.
Yes, because people don't feel safe in a situation like that. In a conversation with a friend or with a lover in an intimate situation, there is a factor of safety and predictability and comfort because of the safety. But in any situation where you don't feel safe, that becomes a performance.
All right, so let's say you're in that kind of a situation, and this includes talking to your mate who you don't feel safe with. Let's say you have disagreements with your mate, but you can't bring yourself to talk about them. There are tools and techniques that you, Natalie Rogers, Natalie H. Rogers, of course, have that would help people overcome this fear. And that's what you teach. We're speaking with Natalie H. Rogers, who is a licensed clinical social worker as well, and we've known for a long time, who has written a book called The New Talk Power. It's not your first book, is it?
No, it's the second.
What was the first one called?
The first one was called Talk Power, and this is a totally new book because there's so much more information about the brain since I wrote the last one.
First step in how you got to, everybody says you got to calm down. The first thing you got to do if you're going to try to talk where you're afraid of talking, you can't do it from an excited place. You have to do it from a calm place. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, I agree.
You do agree.
And the best way to calm down, calming down has two parts to it. The first part has to do with making your breath correcting your breath so that you breathe using your abdominal muscles and not your chest.
You mean your breathing mechanism.
Not
you got to take a mint or something to correct your breath.
Your breathing mechanism, right? Oh, right. That's funny, yeah. Your breathing mechanism, so that you're using your abdominal muscles to do the pumping rather than your chest. That's the first part.
All right. Well, how is that done? Let's go there. So in other words, a person wants to correct themselves. Everybody says, deep, breathe deep and relax. And you and I know that breathe deep and relax are almost, they're
will create just the opposite, right. It will breathing deeply, taking big breaths, will excite you and make your heart beat a mile a minute. So if you were going to run a marathon, it would be a fabulous thing to do. But if you're going to do a presentation or you want to be calm before you make some kind of statement at a meeting, that's the worst thing in the world to do.
What do you do instead?
We want shallow breathing. We want small amounts of air going into the lungs. We want the belly to go up and down. We want the chest to be very, very still. So what you do is you pull your belly in, and everybody can do this with me as I say it. You pull your belly in slowly as you exhale through the nose. Hold that for a minute, and then you release your stomach muscles and take a very little bit of air, not enough to fill up to move your chest. And you practice. This is a very strange way for most people to breathe because most people do not breathe correctly. So this is, people feel they're not getting enough air, they're turning blue. You have to practice this kind of breathing so that you teach your brain to be comfortable and familiar with small amounts of air that are coming in with belly breathing.
Well, this is, you know, for a lot of people, this is really radical information, but I did do some training with Butenko and a few other people who did say that this is one of the big mistakes that people make. I mean, you do yoga and they tell you take a deep, deep breath, right? I mean, really, your best bet is take a deep exhale and then breathe shallow. And breathing shallow should always be done through the nose. And it's really shallow breathing. People want to try it right now. You kind of just breathe through your nose and you breathe very shallow. Like that. And that brings down the tone. It actually reduces the amount of accumulated carbon dioxide. It actually keeps you less hyperventilated and tends to bring you down. Now, this is important if you feel excited. You see, if you feel too excited and the anxiety is being perpetuated by your breathing, you got to calm it down. And this way, short breathing. Now, the real interesting thing about it, Natalie, from what you're saying, is even though it feels unnatural,
yes,
it's the way babies breathe.
Exactly. You were born breathing like this.
Right.
You know, I've worked over the last 22 years, I've worked with thousands, literally thousands of people with this kind of breathing technique. And people who've done yoga, people who are Buddhists, people who've never done yoga, and everybody says the same thing before they do this. I'm never really sure that I'm doing it right. I'm very confused. Is it the top chest, the lower chest, the middle chest, the back, the front? In this system, if you keep your chest very still and you just use your belly, there is no confusion at all. It's very, very clear.
It's like the belly is the bellows,
the belly,
and the thing itself is your nose, you know,
exactly.
And it's going in and out through your nose. Now, this, you've worked with thousands of people, but before you were doing this work, as I knew you years ago, your specialty was working with phobic people.
Yes.
Okay, and this is what you developed to help phobic people?
Well, I was an actress before I ever became a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much interested in the Stanislavski method of training. And when I went back to school, I took a course in public speaking, and it was so dreadful and, you know, it just non-functional, that I had an idea about how you could train people in a step-by-step way to be comfortable in their skin, in their bodies, when they had to do any kind of performance. And you can use these techniques for other kind of phobias, too. Certainly, the fact is that if you breathe correctly, you cannot have a panic attack. They are the complete opposite. So people who I've worked with who have had a history of panic attacks, once they learn how to breathe like this, and even agoraphobic people or people who have fear of heights or planes, when they learn to breathe this way, their panic attacks stop.
Well, actually, a performance anxiety is a form of panic attack. Isn't it? I mean, that's what happens. You want to speak, and you feel, in effect, the very thought of speaking makes you feel a panic.
Well, a panic attack is a very extreme form of performance
mm-hmm.
anxiety. There's a range. There are people who have performance anxiety. They're incredibly uncomfortable, but they get up, and somehow they're able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who they can't even stand up. I mean, they just are knocked.
Like stage fright.
Total stage fright.
And so you
and
get
that's a panic attack, by the way.
Yeah, that's another form of panic attack.
Yeah.
Sure. So now, one thing we know that you've got to do, you want to do, is let's say now we're going to review this. You have an inability to confront or speak or deal with or join conversations where you feel that you're being watched and that your response is being evaluated in some way. If you're one of those folks, this program is for you. Natalie H. Rogers, author of Talk Power, claims that if you do shallow breathing, which is to breathe through your nose and to not breathe deep to relax, but breathe through your nose, you will learn to get more relaxed. Now, once you're in that relaxed place, right, why does that change anything just to relax? Why don't you just go to sleep instead of talking?
Well, you want to talk, so you want to bring down your level of anxiety so that you can think clearly. But that's not the whole picture. That's only the beginning. That's the foundation.
Okay.
The next step has to do with bringing your attention into your body. Most of the time, people's attentions are out there on the audience, and they're very worried about what the audience thinks of them. Do they like them? Are they too tall, too short, too fat, too smart, not smart enough? And so you want to bring your concentration into your body. That's crucial to being able to speak with concentration. So the way you do that is you begin to develop the skill of inner awareness, bringing your attention inside your body. Now, the best way I found to do that is to sit in a chair, start with the breathing, and then focus your attention on the balance of your body. Just be aware that the right side is balanced with the left side. And then maybe you could take two...
What do you mean balanced?
the sense of balance. What's feeling.
That? If you're sitting down, how do you get a sense of balance?
You send your attention
down.
So
you sit in the middle of a chair, I guess, right? To sense your balance?
And you do it, Armand. Focus your attention on your buttocks and be aware that the right side of your body is balanced with the left side. Be aware of that feeling. That is a sixth sense, a sense of balance. And then...
But it's not balanced. You mean be aware of it and bring it into balance?
Be aware of
because it. Because as I'm aware of my buttocks right now, I feel a pain. Oh, that must have been that person I was talking to earlier. No, I feel it's not balanced. Right. I feel...
Well, get balanced, man. Get balanced.
Uh-huh.
See? So you see how what you happened
sure,
to you?
Sure,
how you went inside?
Sure,
now,
I
when you
that.
Do that, the interesting thing is your eyes go out of focus. And that means that you're in a state of inner awareness. And also, another thing you can do to reinforce this, you can hold a paperweight in each hand or a glass of water in each hand or a can in each hand to anchor you to further bring your attention inside. So you have your balance on your buttocks, you have your hands holding these weights, and that will bring you inside.
You actually have to hold the weights, or can you imagine holding the
weights? Well, this is a training. So in the beginning, you want to hold the weights. No, we don't use visualization here. Visualization does not work with performance anxiety. You know why?
Why?
Because in order to visualize, you have to have a high degree of concentration in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Professional athletes use visualization techniques because they have fantastic concentration under duress. But the average person, the average golfer, the average speaker does not have a strong concentration skill. So they can't use the visualization skills. It's great when you're home alone, but in front of a group...
Yeah, you did it. We just did it.
I lost the bet.
We made a bet. I made a bet. See, let me let everybody know this. In the studio, almost everybody who's ever on the air, they wind up somehow or other banging on the console with their hands or with a pen. And I tell them all beforehand, do not bang, but you're going to do it. And Natalie said, not me. I'm a professional. I'm not going to do it. I said, let's make a bet. So we made a bet of double or nothing. That's the only bet I ever make, double or nothing. And there it is. There it is. See?
I'm a professionally calm person.
I know. Professionally calm, right? You still bang on the console. Listen, don't get my buttocks unbalanced. I got you. So now you balance your buttocks, you hold a couple of things in your hands, and you're breathing through your nose. You're doing this in the middle of a meeting somewhere. No, you may not be holding.
No, you're not doing this in a meeting. You're doing this at home because you're training yourself to have inner awareness skills.
So you're learning to talk. You may start talking to your cat or your dog. You're training yourself to do public speaking by training yourself to get centered in this way so far.
Yes, to have good, strong concentration. And the next thing you have to learn how to do is to stand up in such a way that you maintain that feeling of centeredness and to begin walking, feeling the weights in your hands so that you maintain the feeling of centeredness. Now, after a couple of sessions of this, you can let go of the weights in your hands and just walk normally, feeling the weight of your hands, and you'll have it. And then you'll be able to do it out in the world.
Interesting.
And no one will know you're doing it.
Interesting.
It slows down your adrenaline rush. It slows down your rapid heartbeat. The change is unbelievable.
Interesting. So that's for people who want to speak standing, of course.
It's for golfers, for instance. If you want to be able to play golf they say that golf is a mental game and people are very distracted by people around them, kibitzing, the weather. If they learn how to balance their bodies and feel the weight of the club, they can have tremendous concentration there.
Golfers. Mm. You know, Tiger Woods said, this is a quote, hockey is for white people to play. Basketball is for black people to play. Golf is for white people who want to look dress like pimps. This is Armand DeMille sitting here with you with a positive mind. Bringing you some ideas about how you can be a better public speaker. But we are going to be taking your calls later because we're going to be addressing this and the emotions behind it. Now, what makes a person fear? That's another issue, and I'll be talking about that with you. Right now, we've got Natalie with us, and she'll be with us for this half hour. We want to talk about this issue of how you could train yourself better. Now, I do want to say that what Natalie H. Rogers does do is she has very big workshops that where she has a whole bunch of people there at a time, and they are training to do this. But I said, let's not talk about your workshops. Let's talk about what people could do at home. We've got one stage, which is basically all of this is about getting centered. Now, what about the speaking itself? Do you rehearse your speech, or do you just get up there and talk extemporaneously once you get centered? Do you trust that you're going to know what to say? What do you do, Natalie?
In order to do a speech that's entertaining and interesting and satisfying to yourself, you have to have a structure. You can't just get up and talk. And so if you create a structure that has, let's say, the beginning part, the middle, and the end, and you start out by saying, today I am going to talk about blah, 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 whatever, you know, the positive thinking. I believe that positive thinking is crucial for good health. So you have the topic that you're going to talk about, and you have the, what I call the message sentence. It makes it much easier for you to focus on what you're going to say. In my book, that's the only time I'm going to refer to my book. In my book, I have a structure that divides the speech into 8 sections, and so you develop those the information within the 8 sections, and little by little, as time goes by, you internalize this idea of structure so that eventually you can give a talk without using a structure per se.
So you're saying, let's say you want to talk to your husband and you're embarrassed to talk to your husband, or you're afraid to talk to your husband, what you're going to do is rehearse it. In your mind, you're going to say, this is what I want to talk about, and it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Now, let me reinforce this a little bit. The reason that most husbands don't want to listen is because they're afraid there's no end.
Right.
You know, they're afraid that once the person, you know, if a person's not used to talking and then he or she starts talking and they're not allowed to talk very much because the other person ignores them or shut them off, what happens when you get up there and you start talking, you say, oh, I've got the stage now. Now somebody's listening to me. So you keep talking and keep talking and keep talking. And then the other person eventually turns away from you. And then you say to yourself, see, nobody wants to listen. What's very important is to learn to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And there's an outline in your mind of what you want to accomplish. It is not, I'm just going to start talking and let it flow. That's not. Now, that works for some people.
Yeah.
But it is so much more effective if you have a beginning and a middle and an end somewhere to know where you're going to end your point.
What you want is clarity. Clarity conducts information from one mind to another. So, for example, supposing a wife is complaining about the fact that they're both working and yet he expects her to do the cooking and the dishes. She might say, I want to talk to you about our cooking arrangement. I think that, now fill it in, I think that it's only fair that you participate in either the cooking or the cleaning up of the dishes because we're partners here. And I work too. All right, I'm just making this up. I'm sure I could do much better if I thought about it. But the structure is...
What's the ending now in there?
Well, that's the ending.
Well, the ending, but the ending would be, I'd really like to hear from you how you feel about this. So in other words, the ending is an invitation for feedback, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Okay. So then she would say, well, what do you think? Uh-huh. Or how do you feel about this? But the structure is, I think that, fill it in, because, and.
Uh-huh.
And that's a little structure you can have in your mind if you're at a meeting or you're in a conversation where you want to say something that's difficult for you to say.
I've always been amazed when I'm in a meeting, and I've been at a couple of meetings recently, where there may be 100 people present, and then one person stands up and says, there are two things I want to talk about today. I want to talk about point A and point B. From point A, let me tell you about this, because you can see they've structured it in their mind, mm-hmm. and they actually present it clearly. There was one man who spoke recently, and I disagreed with him so much in theory, but then he started talking, and I heard him so clear in his speech that my disagreement faded because I said, well, this is just his opinion, and it's so clear I could understand his opinion.
That's the power of public speaking. You can really change worlds with clear mm-hmm. communication. And the interesting thing is that in a question and answer where people feel intimidated or they're asked overwhelming questions, that, Armand, is a wonderful technique for answering the question. For example, you could say, well, for example, a lawyer friend of mine gave me this example. She said, how would you answer a question where somebody says, I am getting a divorce from my husband and we have a business together. How should I talk to him? Should I talk to him through my lawyer, through his lawyer? Well, the answer to that would be, that is a question that has three parts to it. It has a psychological part, it has a legal part, and it has a practical part. From a psychological point of view, so and so and so, from a legal point of view, you see, so in that way, you give a totally informative answer to this very complex question, and you keep yourself organized.
Keep yourself organized is very important, but you're feeling things. You know what I mean? I mean, you're feeling so much. You grew up with a father who minimalized everything you did. You want to go and you want to talk to this man, whether he be your boss, your husband, or whatever, but you're seeing the face of your father on all these people, and the face is there. Now, is there anything you could do about that? Are you saying, well, you just go up there and talk anyway? What about people who actually see their frightening figures appearing before their heads, Natalie?
The trained person is able to move out of a personal mode into a professional mode. It is possible to do that. You know, Jose Ferrer was once asked in an interview, what is technique? He said, what is technique? Maybe my wife left me yesterday. Maybe my lawyer called me up and told me you lost all your money. Maybe my kid is very sick in the hospital. When I go to that theater, I have to perform in front of people who pay top dollar to see me. My mind, my body, my soul, my everything has to be in top form. That's technique. And that's what training will do for you.
Well, that's for training to talk publicly. But I guess in an intimate conversation where you're just not training to talk publicly, but you want to get your point across, I still think that a lot of people, they can have all the technique in the world, they're going to be spooked. They could practice. You're saying a behaviorist approach. You're saying just correct the behavior, get out there, do what you do, don't deal with your emotions. I mean, just quell your emotions by breathing. Quell them, you're saying. You're saying if you feel terror, fear, if you feel like crying. You know, a lot of people I know, they get up there and they want to talk and they start to cry.
Well, that is a therapeutic issue. I am not saying that people shouldn't go to therapy to help them to find their true powerfulness.
You know? Well, how do you know when your shyness of speaking is not a therapeutic issue? I mean, it's always a therapeutic issue. I mean, are you saying, I think you're saying, you know, I think you're saying, well, do the training of it and see if you can get past it with just the training, because I think that's true. Sometimes people have a habit that is based on a fear that's no longer there. And so if they have this habit of not being able to speak up for themselves, but their actual fear is no longer there, maybe they were in therapy, maybe they didn't need therapy, but their childhood fear is no longer there, but they did an adaptation that led them afraid to speak in public. Do the training and see if you could train yourself to speak in public by using these methods. And if you find yourself still inhibited, then you've got to go and take the therapeutic approach to dealing with the issues behind it. Is that what you're saying?
It's been my experience, Armand, that I have never met anybody who couldn't be trained to talk in public. However, people in my workshops do have to go to therapy, certain people, in addition to. But with the proper training, everybody can learn how to speak in public. I really believe that. Now, when it comes to a personal or an intimate kind of conversation, there may be a problem that can only be addressed in a therapeutic modality.
My guest is Natalie H. Rogers, author of The New Talk Power. We are going to be back with you in a little bit here talking about talking. Let's take a short break and we'll be back shortly.
You are listening to The Positive Mind with Armand Jamiro on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial.
like a desert bloom, I sit at your feet. Like a desert bloom, I sit at your feet, trolling for a raindrop to fall from. To fall from your lips, waiting to be awoken and born by your calling, waiting to be awoken and born by your calling, waiting.
Sheila Chandra. Talk about people with the ability to speak. Sheila Chandra, the Zen Kiss. I'm going to play another piece for you towards the end of the show where she does this remarkable form of speech, which I'll show you about. We're sitting here with Natalie H. Rogers, talking about speaking and being able to speak for yourself, speaking in public. And not only speaking in public, performance anxiety, the fears that come up. Natalie, in the training, okay, so we've got a few things. Number one, we have breathing. The second one, we have centering yourself through body awareness. The third, we have learning to rehearse what you're going to say, have a beginning, a middle, and an end. What's the fourth? Is that it? I mean, is that the whole thing?
Well, the fourth is rehearsal. You really have to rehearse.
When you could, of course.
When you can,
if it's a spontaneous thing, you're suddenly called into your boss's meeting, you can't start to rehearse. Maybe, I guess, you could rehearse in your mind.
Yes, you can rehearse in your mind. You can go over what you'd like to say or write down a few words. But nothing that's spontaneous in terms of a presentation really works out all that well, I don't think.
Nothing if you're a phobic person. In other words, if you're not used to talking, I do spontaneous speaking all the time, and I'm sure so do you. You're doing spontaneous speaking now.
That's true, yes.
So that works out. But if you're somebody who's afraid, and you jump in and say, I'm going to talk, right, and you get up there and you talk for the first time, it doesn't work out that well unless you've got somebody who's really on the other side of that speech milking you along and taking care of you, you know?
Well, you and I are talkers. We're professional talkers. For the mm-hmm. average person who doesn't speak professionally all the time, that person needs to rehearse, whether they are really afraid or not.
Gotcha. Gab disadvantaged. You know, people who are don't have that gift.
You know what I think is very interesting, Armand, about this fear of speaking in public? I have found in my experience that there are two groups that have this problem. One group, the large group, about 80% of the people who I see, have been socialized from early childhood or from birth practically to have this fear because of punitive parents, embarrassing parents, older brothers and sisters, teachers, harsh punitive teachers, And that's one group. But there's another group, a smaller group, and what they report is that they always spoke. They never had a problem speaking. They were valedictorians, they were presidents of their clubs, and then suddenly one day they developed a panic attack in front of an audience, and from that time on they could not speak in public. And what we know about phobias is that they come from some kind of traumatic event. So fear of speaking in public in the second group is a post-traumatic stress syndrome. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. Do you notice that that second group is more men or women? Or do you think it's equally distributed?
I think the second group is more equally distributed than the first group. I think the first group, it's like a little bit more women than men. Mm-hmm. And the second group is pretty equally distributed. I never thought of it that way. But you might have more men in the second group, right?
You know why I'm talking? I say that because somewhere around pubescence, a lot of men develop a fear of speaking, is what I've noticed. And what's the reason behind it? It's a funny kind of thing. Standing up and talking. Right, for a young adolescent.
Right. I mean, he might be afraid his erection might show.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly. There
That's
we are, talking dirty again.
Do you know I
but
never thought of that?
It happens so much. You don't, because you don't have a dirty mind. But I do. Because a lot of young guys, you know, have these spontaneous erections sitting in classes around 13 years old. And they get shamed when they're standing up with what they call a Woody. Right? Mm. And so suddenly, you know, the teacher says, get up and talk, and they get nervous. And one of the ways nervousness manifests in a pubescent boy, in a boy who's just beginning to show these signs, is they get erections. The nervousness goes into an erection.
Mm,
right?
True.
The opposite for adult men, which when they get nervous, they lose their erection. So here's a boy who's suddenly going to stand up in class, and he's afraid somebody's going to see him and shame him and mock him for this. And so they develop this kind of fear. And we, in the therapeutic work, have discovered that incidents like that really abound in people who are afraid to speak in public.
That's an interesting thing. I never thought of that.
What are the basis do you find for the people's fears of speaking in public? I mean, as a psychologist, as a therapist, what other kind of things have people come up with? Being shamed by their parents, I'm sure, is a good one. You know, is one that you could cripple a child easily. By just keep telling them they're inadequate, right?
Being shamed by older brothers and sisters. We have a lot of younger siblings in my classes.
Interesting.
And when I say, well, does your brother speak or does your sister speak? Oh, they're fabulous speakers. I don't know. I just have this problem. And then what comes out is a history of abuse by the jealous older child to the younger child. And I think that's very underestimated, the virulence of sibling hatred. I don't call it sibling rivalry. It's really sibling hatred, that when that young baby comes into the family, that older kid goes nuts when the mother suddenly drops him or her and focuses the attention on the little child. And the elder child never, ever forgives the little kid for being born.
And will persecute that kid the whole way.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, this happens to children, to older children, who never got any proper loving in the first place. It's when you had a fight for the love, right? When you're an older child and you had a fight for the love you got, and there was conditional love there in the first place, then a younger child comes along who gets the love. Well, your little conditional love gets lost. Right. No wonder you hate the kid. No wonder you hate this baby. So I feel sorry for both in that situation. But I think what you're saying is really kind of dramatic. The virulent hatred of an adult, of an older child, an older child towards their younger child, towards that newborn, right, who wants to shame him into non-existence. You want that kid to feel inadequate. You want that other kid to be crazy. You want to drive them out of the house.
The power of jealousy in this society, the older child, the younger child, or all their place, is very underestimated in our culture. One young man said to me that when he was going into his pubescence, his voice was still high. And when he would talk on the telephone, his brother would say that he was a girl. You know,
you sound like a girl.
Yeah,
right.
You
sound like a girl. Your voice. I've heard men come in to talk to me. I've heard people when they come into the studio here, which is built into the clinic that I run, and they come in, they see the studio, and we kid around and we talk on air for a moment, not on air, but on make-believe on air, and they say, I hate my voice. They have beautiful voices. This idea of I hate my voice always seems to go back to being shamed as a child by another sibling.
Right.
Who made fun of their voice.
Also, there's a Catholic schools, you know, people in their 40s and 50s who went to Catholic schools and had, you know, you got a gold star for being quiet. If you talked, you were punished. If you talked too much or you spoke out or you wanted to raise your hand too much. So many, many children were taught that speaking is bad, that you should blend into the group, you shouldn't stand out. And that's picked up in, you know, Catholic schools, I guess.
That you should blend into the background, that you shouldn't speak out at all? It's more of that same thing. You know, I wonder if there's a woman equivalent to the male fear of being seen as having an erection. I wonder if women's breasts, you know, as they develop, if they feel any shame around that as well. Do you as a woman know anything about that? I don't know anything about that.
I think the shame with women is to be pushy.
No, but I mean about the physical body.
Well, maybe.
And not standing up.
There is shame about so many physical conditions, like a large nose, a skin condition, too short or too tall, large breasts, racial religious differences, overweight, underweight, foreign accent, unsuitable attire, small or no breasts, different sexual orientations. There are so many reasons why people are ashamed.
Oh, you can't imagine how fat people, right? And I like to say that because I'm fat. People who are overweight talk a great deal about, I don't want to be seen like this. If I get up there, they think that people are going to be looking at their weight. I guess people are looking at their weight. You know, I recently ran into a gym instructor who was leading a class, a gymnastic class. I was sitting there watching, and she was an overweight lady. And I was thinking to myself, oh, look at her. Look how overweight she is. And she's leading a gym class. And everybody else kind of, I guess, would comment on it. But I think to the average person standing up giving a speech, your voice and your effectiveness of your speech takes away from whatever you're doing. I mean, look at Oprah Winfrey at her worst, you know, or at her heaviest. I don't know if it was her worst. She commanded her audience.
The element of dignity in a human being who can stand up and really speak with clarity and with conviction is so overpowering that when a person like that stands up and begins to talk, no matter how fat or thin or what they are, the audience is immediately captivated by their presence. And something happens. They are no longer a fat person, but they are a force, a power. Mm-hmm. It's a kind of charismatic transformation that occurs. It's so interesting. I've seen people in a group who were totally ignored, you know, little people, short people, fat people. And then when they stood up to speak and they spoke beautifully, their reputation, their status in the group grew immeasurably. They become kind of like a celebrity, a very special. You become very special. That's why it's so important to be able to express yourself in public.
Mm. I was at a meeting of people from WBAI producers and WBAI recently, and a lot of them got up to talk just to share opinions. And a lot of them were dressed very grungy, you know? They were down. It was like, that's what was in this day. Everybody was at the end of a work day. But when they got up and they started speaking, some of them, professional radio people, but they had that talent, they had that thing, and they get up and speak, and the beauty of their voices took them. They were like angels wearing grubby clothing. It's okay. It's okay you're all creased and you're all, you know, you're unshaven. It's okay. Because if you carry yourself, your voice becomes the song, and people don't look at the package that it comes in. Or they don't care so much. They want to hear what you have to say.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It's not only the voice, though. It's the clarity of thought. The clarity. That is the most important thing. You could have a horrible voice. You could have a creaky voice, a high voice, a low voice. If you are clear, if you pause, if your concentration is excellent, you will be received beautifully by the audience.
But I think it's more than clarity. I think it's more than clarity because, you know, I know a lot of clear speakers who are clear and precise and they're boring. I think what you say about the pause, I mean, you've got to bring in your spirit somewhere. If there is no spirit present, unless somebody is saying something about the way you make $1 million by next year is step A, step B, step C, and you're going to write it all down. But if you're going to connect with people, you've got to connect through the heart, through the clarity of speech, but it can't be too precise.
I didn't say, you used that word, Armand, precise. I never said precise. I said clear.
Uh-huh.
And clear implies that there is also an emotional component. It's a total, clear means totality. It's everything. It's the mind, the heart. It's a unification of your thoughts and your spirit. Yes, that's what I mean by clear. And that's what gets through to people.
Boy, so that's really tough when you're at the beginning. If you've been someone who's been speech phobic, you can expect at the beginning when you get up there that it's not going to be so perfect, right? That step five here might be that the first time you speak, you may flub a little bit, and that's got to be okay.
Well, that's why I suggest that everything you say be written out. The first time you speak, if you've practiced it properly and it's properly structured, it can be magnificent. I have had experiences with students who never spoke before in their lives and won contests, Toastmaster contests and other kind of contests, speaking with people, other contestants who were very experienced speakers, and they won because they were so clear and they had presented a beautiful presentation.
All right, we've got Natalie H. Rogers, author of The New Talk Power, who is saying to us that if you want to say speak for effectiveness and you're inhibited about your speaking, if you've got performance anxiety, whatever you want to call it, that there's a kind of a proven method that she has that to ends the thought blocking, the rapid heartbeat, the feeling of dread or shame, the intense adrenaline rush, the trembling, and all the stuff, the rambling that goes with people who are nervous about speaking. And the way we have it so far is step one, you do shallow breathing. You do shallow breathing to get yourself kind of down to breathing like a baby. It's breathing through the nose and breathing slowly, breathing short breaths, not big deep breaths. Number two, center your body somehow. Try to sense where your body is and try to get it to feel in balance. Step three, as I'm understanding this, I'm such a good student, aren't I, Natalie? Step three is to organize your thought to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And step four is to practice. Step five is, if you can, write down what you're going to say. Right? And now the step four of practice means on your own, whatever you want to say, just start saying it. You know what I mean? Start saying it out loud without the audience there, without the people there.
Yes. And
what's step six?
Step six. Well, I want to talk for a minute about people who stutter.
Good.
There are people who stutter and then other people who don't have a pronounced stutter, but they call what they do is jamming up. They jam up.
That's stammering?
Up. It's a kind of stammering.
Now, what's the difference between stuttering and stammering?
Well, stuttering, when you stutter, you really stop. You cannot deliver an entire sentence. But stammering would be a hesitation in the middle of a sentence once or twice. I have found the most amazing thing for stutterers, and especially stutterers on the telephone. Stutterers are haunted by having to have telephone conversations.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, it's much more difficult for a stutterer on the phone. If you pick up two weights, like two little rocks or two paperweights or two cans of food, and you hold one in each hand, and you talk, feeling the weight of the hands while you're talking, being aware of it, you will completely stop stuttering. It's absolutely amazing. It's like a miracle.
Say it again.
What you do is you put a weight in each hand, in the right hand and the left hand. It could be two glasses of water or two cans or two paperweights. Stand up or sit down, feel the weights. Once you feel the weights, then begin to talk. But as you talk, concentrate on the feeling in your hands, and the stuttering will slide away. It's just the most unbelievable thing you ever saw.
Now, you can't really do that in public. What do people do in public? If they want to get up in public and they're afraid of speaking, I guess they could wear wrist weights. You could do anything to kind of get yourself.
Oh, that's such a good idea. I never thought of wrist weights. That's excellent. Well, what happens is I train my students with little weights in the workshop on the first day, and that sensitizes them to the feeling, the awareness of weight in the hands. On the second day, I take the weights away, and I ask them to work with the weight of the hand itself. So everybody in your audience, if you just pick up your hands and feel the weight of your hands, that is a centering device, so that, you see that? Don't wiggle, don't juggle, just...
Yeah, my hands are heavy, right.
You see that? And feeling the heavy hands activates the right side of the brain, which is the side of the brain that can help you to be more quiet and diminishes the activity of the left side of the brain. The left side of the brain produces those nervous and fearful voices or sentences that activate your rapid heartbeat.
Natalie H. Rogers, not related to Natalie Rogers. All right, so now this is important. What about children? Let's talk about child power or child talk power. You know, you have kids going to school, and you have, I think it's just so important that the child, if they're going to deal in class, if they could speak properly, it is such a tool, such an instrument to be able to speak clearly in class.
Working with a child, if you have a child who's very shy or can't talk in class and the teacher reports that the child is very embarrassed about answering questions, you can begin to work with your child. But you have to set up a work situation. You have to put the time aside where you're going to practice rehearsing with your child. And so what you do is let the child sit on a chair, and you ask the child a very simple question and ask the child to raise her hand or his hand and ask him to feel the weight of his hand as he's raising his hand. So you're already getting him kind of familiar with the body awareness process, and then ask him to answer the question. You have to do this for quite a long time, for several weeks, several times a week. You ask the child three questions, and then the child responds with an answer to get the child used to. Now, don't sit near the child. You should sit at least 12 feet or more away from the child to get a kind of performance distance, not a conversational distance. And that's the first step in helping a child answer questions.
It sounds like torture, though. If a parent is doing it, it's so hard. Somebody from the outside has to do it, not the parent. You know what I mean? I mean, the kid's trying to perform for the parent, and the parent gets restless with it. You as a teacher would do that with a child, and you'd be loving and accepting. But parents get frustrated, you know? I told you, just stand up and talk. You know, and they say things like that, which just create the deeper wound that created it in the first place. I don't know if people could do it with their own children. In fact, I'm willing to bet that if you could do it effectively with your child probably doesn't need it.
I would agree. I say if you get in any way irritated or impatient, that you have to drop it immediately. But a very good thing to do is to reward a child every time the child does speak, to give them some kind of
a biscuit,
a little gift, a little sticker or a little biscuit or something.
They do with dogs, right?
Well, listen,
a part of this is training, you know, and it goes into that world of the behavioral performance stuff that I generally think is a gitnip. You know, gitnip in my theory is it's a good in theory, G-I-T, good in theory, not in practice. A gitnip is we have these good ideas of what would work, and I think a lot of behaviorist psychology is that. But Natalie, I know you, and I know how effective you've been. I know people who have worked with you. I know we had even a staff member here who took one of your courses and went on to become a public speaker, one of our therapists who work here. So I know you're not an insensitive person who just goes around saying, well, get to it and get the job done and forget about the feelings. I know you're also a licensed clinical therapist who also attends to these feelings as well. Thank you. Thank you for this, because I think we've learned a great deal today about the different steps that a person could do. If they wanted to learn more, they could, of course, get the book, The New Talk Power by Natalie H. Rogers. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. This has been enlightening and fun. Hey, Sheila Chandra. Talk about talking, huh? Pay attention to this, my friends. We'll be back with you soon. Bye-bye for now. Natalie, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it was such a pleasure.
Bye-bye for now.
Tak ta jum ta jum ta tak ta jum ta jum ta ta jum di tak ta jum ta jum ta jum di ta di tak nak ku pandari kita nagi chali ku tak tak janaku janaku tak ta dari kita talang dong kita tak ta dari kita tak ta lang dong kita tak ta dari kita tak ta to
Father of creation, saying, one love.